I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This week in Underdogs, we've got NBA teams that can rebound from tough starts to make noise in the second half.
And MLB teams that'll start strong and stay strong.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog. Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. You believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
And I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you. Happy late February. I'm your co-host, Jordan Brenner, joined as always by the man, the myth, the legend, Peter Keating. Hello, Peter.
Jordan, I finally found this past weekend the correct analogy for our show, which is that if I make 187 good points in a show, you will make 211, just like an NBA All-Star game.
Wow. You've been workshopping that one all week, huh?
Yeah, my nobody who lives here wants to hear any more from those ideas from me.
So we're in a transition period in the sports world. Football's over, and our bread and butter, the NCAA tournament, not quite there yet.
We're counting down.
It's down, and
soon.
Stay tuned for March, because if you know Peter and I from Bracket Breakers, from Giant Killers back at ESPN, we'll have all that goodness coming for you all March. Upsets galore, tournament predictions will hopefully make you some money, help you with your brackets, that whole thing. But until then, we've got some stuff to talk about. A little later in the show, we're going to give you some early impressions on MLB teams that could be poised for big underdog seasons. At the start of spring training, obviously there's a lot to change. There's still big free agents who haven't signed yet. We're going to give you an initial look. I've got a couple bets worth making. But first, we're coming off the NBA All-Star break. It's a perfect time to take stock of teams that maybe are a little bit out of the mix right now that could be poised for a big second half run to get in contention. Peter, the league is stratified right now. We've talked about the historically bad teams. So there's nothing they can do, the Blazers, the Spurs, the Wizards, the Pistons, the Hornets, etc. There's nothing they can do to get in the mix. And we already know, look, the Celtics are awesome. The Cavs are red hot. The Timberwolves and Thunder and Clippers are playing well. So we're looking, we don't have a huge sample size of teams to look at here for teams that could maybe change their fortunes in the second half, but I think we've identified a couple of good ones.
There's some mixing in the middle, right? Especially because in the East, a couple of teams seem to be ready to, or are in the middle of collapsing despite really, really good first halves. So there's some excitement there in the middle. Who you got?
All right, well, I think we both gravitated toward the same first team. It's not exciting. It's not an off the radar pick, but it's valid. And it's the Golden State Warriors. They're 27-26. We know they've struggled, but here's the thing. First of all, various advanced metrics say they should have a better record to begin with. For instance, NBA Stuffer says they should have a 55.3% winning percentage, which would put them 12th in the NBA. Instead of 10th in the Western Conference. So they're underperforming. Second, they're hot. They've won 8 of their last 10 games. This time's with Draymond Green returning. Look, it's always a question of whether Draymond Green is going to be able to sustain good behavior. But one thing you can't deny, when he's locked in and focused, he's still an incredibly effective, important player. They're just a different team with him. They're plus 4.9 points per 100 possessions better on off with Draymond.
Yeah. Yes.
And then there's a couple other things to factor in. One, they have the 6th easiest remaining schedule, including the Spurs 3 times. Andrew Wiggins, who's been awful for most of the season, seems to be figuring it out a little bit, finished the first half with 6 straight double-figure scoring games. They seem to have found this Klay Thompson off the bench thing in the last game. I don't buy that as like a panacea for his struggles, but it's an interesting move. And then with Jonathan Kuminga at the 4, Draymond at the 5, and Brandon Pajemski playing well, it's a different look. Plus,
well, right,
maybe
Jordan,
Chris
look,
Paul comes back.
I mean, what you're talking about is that the reason that they haven't looked as good as we thought does have something to do with luck, right? If you line up teams by their point differential, adjusted for their schedule strength, and then you line them up by their standings, there's only a couple of teams that are noticeably out of whack, right? The Warriors are one. So we would expect them to do better just as the season gets longer, because they've gotten, they've looked bad for some reasons that are injury related, behavior related, but also just random. On the other hand, the reasons why they're hot recently isn't just they happen to be putting together a good streak. It's because they found lineup combinations that are actually really, really working. You kind of blew by Pajemski right there, but Jordan, the reason that it's working that Klay Thompson goes to the bench is because they've got Pajemski slotted in and he's playing so well that the lineups with Thompson coming off the bench are actually stronger than before. And the starting lineup is stronger than before. You know, I love to look at 2-, 3-, and 4-man combos, right? And the plus minus of how adding players to a mix affects the guys who you start off with. Well, with Pajemski on the court, Curry's just playing better. When Curry, Payton, and Pajemski are on the court together, which is only about 7 minutes a game, but in those 7 minutes, the Warriors are taking 7 3-pointers and hitting more than half of them. Curry is getting so many open looks with Pajemski on the court, and you can't deny that, at least in this burst we've seen recently, Pajemski's energy. I mean, there's a great athletic story, I think, by Anthony Slater, talking about how he has a mix of confidence and delusion. That is how strongly this guy believes in himself, you know, and he's out of Santa Clara, right? I mean, he was number one pick, but not a heralded pick. This guy comes in, and Draymond Green himself has said all Pajemski does is talk shit. That's all he does all day. He's come in, he's given them some energy, and he's really opening up open, because what he's doing is, right, he's playing with real aggressiveness on defense, and he's not being reckless or careless with the ball or doing anything dumb on offense. So what he's doing is he's creating these open looks for Curry, and it's really working. So I think the hot streak is sustainable and the bad luck will even out. And so, yes, the Warriors have one more run in them, I think, here.
Now, I will tell you, they're even afloat right now because they've absolutely beat up on bad teams.
Yeah.
They're 16-3 against teams below 500, 11-23 against teams above 500. So they're going to have to prove that they still have what it takes to beat better teams. But again,
yeah, but first they have to make the playoffs, and to make the playoffs, they got to beat up on these bad teams, right? Playing Minnesota or Denver is going to be a different question. You're absolutely right.
Right. But, and do you want to face Steph in a playoff series? I don't.
Well, that's the point. Once they get into the play-in games, or they make the playoffs or whatever, once they're not 10th or 11th in the West anymore, then you don't talk about Pajemski anymore. You talk about Curry and a resurgent Draymond Green, right?
So Warriors, not dead. Anyone else you've got your eye on for a second half run from where they are right now?
Jordan, you had your eye on Orlando early on, and they create so many turnovers early in the season that they were a fun giant killer to watch. Mm-hmm. There are three reasons why I think they've got a big run left in them. One is Banchero. I mean, if you have taught us anything, Jordan, it's that we should be asking if the best player on a team is X, can they win in the playoffs or can they win a championship? And superstars matter in this league more than anything else. He does everything. I mean, he is a classic case where the eye test meets the analytics, right? So if you haven't seen him, go see him. He does everything. And if that's the best player on your team, you can win an awful lot of games. Number one.
I never thought he'd be this kind of playmaker, by the way. He's averaging over 5 assists a game. I didn't see that even in the season at Duke, but it's really fun to watch his game round out.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Second is the defense has stuck. They're still fourth in the league in points given up per 100 possessions. And all up and down the roster, I mentioned to you Trevelyan Queen, and you laughed like, why wouldn't you mention him? Jordan, it's because even the guys playing 3 minutes or 5 minutes a game for this team are maniacal on defense. I mean, Jonathan Isaac is called the Minister of Defense. He only plays 14 minutes a game. These guys are allowing under 40% shooting. And so it's part of the coaching. It's part of the roster. It's part of the if you will, the culture. It's just their style of play. The defense is going to stick. It wasn't a product of early season overconfidence or aggression. And then the third thing is, Orlando has the easiest schedule left of any team in the NBA. Their opponents that they have left on the schedule have combined for a winning percentage of just 435. That's the lowest in the league by a significant margin. So I think they're going to at least make the play-in game. And, you know, in the East, as long as you don't end up playing the Celtics in the first round, you can be forgiven for thinking you got a long season ahead of you.
They're an interesting team. They still don't have a point guard. They've got a lot of guys playing there, but
yeah,
over the next year, that's the biggest spot they've got to upgrade. If they get a real playmaking point guard, and maybe it's Anthony Black in time, but he's not there yet. Watch out for this team. They've had some injury issues too, particularly Wendell Carter. So it'll be fun to watch them in the second half. Let's talk about a long shot title contender for a second. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Team kind of flying under the radar. It wouldn't be an NBA show if I didn't mention the New Orleans Pelicans. Okay. Right now you can get them at plus 6,500 to win the title, which is below a lot of teams worse than them. Here's the thing about the Pelicans. They're 33-22 right now. According to ESPN's relative power index, they should be 36-19. Most underlying metrics say they're about the sixth best team in the league, not the sixth best team in the Western Conference. They seem to be putting it together now. They've won 7 of their last 8 games, not against the best collection of teams, but wins are wins. Seventh in they got a top 10 defense. They're 13th in offense, and it can be better. They've got guys who could get it done scoring in a tight playoff series. CJ McCollum, Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram. We love our friend Herb Jones. Why not the Pelicans, Peter?
I like it. I like it as I like the value, Jordan, and I like the team. There's the only answer I have is that there's a lot of teams out there in their way, and they already know that. You already know that. But the value in making that bet is certainly there. I continue to be intrigued by the front running Timberwolves because one of the reasons, because they're the only team in the league that does not take any rest days at all. There is no load management. They are acutely aware of how they have to win now. And something else you always say is the most desperate team wins in a given situation. I think the Timberwolves are going to be.
Wait, are you calling the Timberwolves? Oh, you're saying to upset them in the playoffs. Got it.
Yes. I think the Timberwolves are going to have their, pedal to the floor of the car from here until they happen to lose. And so I wonder about that.
One last thing on the Pelicans before we shift to baseball, Peter. This is I find this really interesting. I was on Ben Falk's excellent site, Cleaning the Glass, okay? And the Pelicans still need to figure out how to maximize Zion, Ingram, and CJ McCollum on the court together, okay? That's by far their most common lineup, and they've actually been outscored by 2.8 points per 100 possessions with that group together. If you sub in Dyson Daniels for McCollum, okay, their next most common lineup, they're outscoring teams by 21 points per 100 possessions, okay? Or if you take the normal starting lineup and replace Zion with Trey Murphy, they're outscoring teams by 24.5 points per 100 possessions. So staggering those guys' minutes or just finding a better way for the three of them to play together, I think, is the key to unlocking this team's upside.
Yeah, it's an interesting question whether they can do that on the fly. Yeah. I want to throw one more value bet at you. Jordan, right now the Dallas Mavericks are plus 3,000. There has been an absolute crazy, stunning turnaround in their defense since the trade deadline. Now, it's a very small sample size, but they've gone from 20-something in the league to fourth. PJ Washington has ignited the play of both Kyrie and Luka. What do you do if you have Kyrie and Luka on your team? If you're smart, you go out and you get front court guys who can play outstanding defense. That's what they did. And so the turnaround in their defense is short-lived so far, but it's something to keep an eye on, I think.
I mean, they did beat both the Wizards and the Thunder, Peter. I mean, not the Thunder, excuse me, the Wizards and the Spurs. So
you got to start somewhere. We're talking about playoff positioning.
All right, let's hold off on anointing this as, the next bad boy Pistons defensively.
In the meantime, you can go out and watch Uncle Drew, a great movie, no matter what anyone says.
Yeah, that's enough for the NBA for now. Let's talk.
I bring up Kyrie, and that's enough, huh?
Yeah. So let's talk some MLB underdogs right after this.
Underdog, underdog.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Underdog.
We're back. Pitchers and catchers, everybody's in spring training now. You're already hearing reports that so-and-so's in the best shape of his life and so-and-so's fixed to swing and yada, yada, yada. Everything's going to be rosy. So let's keep a rosy tint on our glasses, Peter, and look at some teams that are long shots who might be able to win a division, win a league, win a World Series. We nailed this last year. We were on the Reds and the Diamondbacks before they got good. So let's take a look at this now, and then we'll probably do this once again at the end of spring training when presumably guys like Blake Snell and Cody Bellinger and Jordan Montgomery have found a team and changed the balance of power.
Presumably.
You never know.
Blake Snell might be pitching for Yamamoto's old team in Japan by the time he finds a home.
Yeah, MLB needs to do something. Like, I don't know if the answer is saying, like, if you don't sign by February 1st, you're ineligible to play for the first month of the, I don't know. Like, but it just, they've turned the hot stove into this slow burn. It's just boring, but I digress. Peter, surveying the landscape of Major League Baseball, is there a particular long shot that really stands out to you?
Jordan, the Padres won 82 games last year. Their over under for this year is 81.5. The world sees this team as a 500 team. But if there's one thing I could make everybody understand is that every now and then, all the different kinds of bad luck you can talk about pile into one place at the same time. Last year, the Padres were 9-23 in one-run games. I mean, that's by far the worst record. It's actually hard to do. They were 2-12 in extra innings. Remember that playoff game where the Yankees fans were all upset because they watched Matt Carpenter just whiff, right? Three straight fastballs. Matt Carpenter did that about 150 times last year for San Diego. Their middle-of-the-order guys were horrible in high leverage situations. In situations that FanGraphs calls high leverage, Jake Cronenworth hit 128 last year with no home runs. At the same time, their relievers just said to, they'd come into games, they'd say to the inherited runners, here, come on, score. They allowed 39% of inherited runners to score. That ranks them between the A's, the Athletics, who won 50 games, and the Rockies, who won 59 games. All of these things tend to snap back, okay? They tend to regress to the mean. They are not sustainable from year to year. The Padres, given their underlying performance, should have scored about, should have won about 90 games last year.
All right, you do know that they lost arguably the best hitter in baseball and last year's Cy Young Award winner, right?
Yeah, well, why do you think they don't want to sign Snell? Because maybe his performance, they've concluded, isn't sustainable either, because since he led baseball in all of walks. Now, I've got nothing bad to say about Soto. But look, they're working from a platform of about 90 wins, not 80 or 82 wins.
Are we just betting their over under win total? Because I think they're betting them to win the division.
Well, they're plus 1200. They're plus 1200 to win the division. The Dodgers,
if they beat
division,
out the Dodgers, Diamondbacks for that matter.
I don't think we can say that, but they're a better team than people think.
So what's their over under? What are we betting?
81.5.
All right. So we're betting on the Padres to have a winning record.
Yeah, and look, they've imported some talent that are good enough defenders to be above replacement level, like Higashioka. They're going to play Jose Azoka or more, guys whose names you won't know, but who will not be these zeros. Like,
Let's see if Michael King has the breakout I thought it was coming with the Yankees this year. That could change the rotation. Peter, I'm aiming a little higher in terms of projecting. Not, you know, I don't want to just bet on someone to have a winning record. Okay. Let's take a division winner. And you were on the Reds last year early, before they even brought up Ellie De La Cruz. But this team is plus 340 to win the NL Central. That trails the Cardinals and their, I know they made some moves, but they just brought in a bunch of 35-year-old pitchers and the Cubs. So I don't see any reason why the Reds shouldn't be as likely as they are to win that division. They have a terrific young lineup. We've covered it at length. Most of these guys didn't even, you know, weren't with the team in the beginning of last year. So a full season of Ellie De La Cruz, of Marte, of Will Benson, of Spencer Steer, of Matt McClain. Like, that's fantastic. They added Jaime Candelario, who will help. And then the biggest thing is their pitching's going to be better.
The upside of the pitching staff is incredible, right? And it's not just Ashcraft and Hunter Green.
Right.
So they got more guys on the way. They got Loader on the way, which is interesting to me. Yeah.
And they got Nick Martinez. We talked about a week ago, was it? As an innings eater. They got Frankie Montas betting on his comeback. So I love the Reds. That's a great bet to win the division right now. I've already made it. And join me, and together we will count our dollars.
Well, I just want to point out the Cubs are not as good value. They're plus 185.
Right.
But they won only 83 games last year. They should have won something like 90. They suffered from bad luck. They also had some holes that are just so easy to fill because they were basically below replacement level at first base. I mean, they're playing Trey Mancini on his last legs, Eric Hosmer on his last legs, Jared Young. I mean, they were -2 WAR just from first base. Even if Michael Busch is just an okay player, they plucked from the Dodgers farm system, basically.
Is this team really better than the Reds? Like, why are they
a favorite
to win the division?
I think their median, what we should expect their average performance to be is probably better than the Reds, although the Reds have a skyrocketingly higher upside, right? If everything goes right for the Reds, they could blow the doors off everybody. But you're assuming all of these young players are going to take a big step forward in this year. What if Ellie De La Cruz strikes out 200 times? You know, nobody's a bigger fan than me, but for him and McClain and all the pitchers, I mean, the Reds were pretty lucky last year.
I mean, do I want to bet on a team that's going to lead off Mike Tauchman? Do I want to bet on Michael Busch and Nick Madrigal and whoever else is playing? You know, I mean, like, there's plenty of questions for the Cubs, too. And don't even get me started on the Cardinals.
I think I love the Nick Madrigal trade at the time, but I think it's time for us to give up. I thought he might be a fun contact hitter, but no. But let's agree on one thing about that division. The Cardinals, overrated. The Cardinal magic or management philosophy does not seem to be in effect anymore. And the betting public always loves the Cardinals, and I don't think it's justified anymore. There's should be no premium on St. Louis.
All right, hit me with another long shot.
Other than the Cardinals? Jordan, I think you like this team even more than I do. The Royals were dreadful last year, but they were very unlucky based on their underlying metrics. They should have won about 66 games instead of 56 games. You know, they all have these pitchers whose ERAs are all worse than their FIPs, like even Greinke, but also Brady Singer. They also gave a lot of playing time to guys who should be very easy to replace. I don't think we're going to see Jackie Bradley Jr. out there for another couple of hundred plate appearances. So, I mean, just from inertia, they should bounce up to 67 wins. They've got more talent coming in. So they don't have
a good farm system. That's the one thing but yes, we just wrote about this in our Athletic piece.
Yes.
And the value here with the Royals is they're plus 850 to win a weak division. So just betting on randomness alone there is interesting. And then, yes, you pointed out, first of all, two big rotation upgrades, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo. These aren't going to be game one World Series starters, but for what the Royals had there and who they have to beat to win the division, those are big, big upgrades. Okay, Hunter Renfro in the outfield. Again, it's not like adding Juan Soto, but for this team, it's a big step up. And then you talk about their young players, MJ Melendez, who you've loved for a while, Bobby Witt Jr. just signed a big contract. Vinny Pasquantino. If these guys are healthy and continue along their trajectory, yes, you're with a team that's plus 850, you're looking for someone with upside. And this team does have upside, right?
Now look, yes. And where it comes from is someplace interesting, because not only have they committed to signing their good young talent like Bobby Witt, but they finally starting to show signs of understanding that if you can get rid of a guy who's really, really bad, if you have someone who's a little better. You mentioned Vinny Pasquantino. Look, if Nick Prado doesn't work out, and it looks like he's not going to, then you play Vinny. This is in contrast to bad teams don't act this way. Bad teams keep playing the same guys. And not only that, signing players who are similar to the bad guys. Look at the Nationals. The Nationals' big signing is who? Nick Senzel, because he had 23 good games for Cincinnati at the end of the year last year. Yep. Carter Kieboom is still on their bench. They're going to play Joey Meneses.
Excuse me, that's my favorite name. And Kaboom!
Yeah, I mean, what are they
kaboom!
Doing? They brought in Joey Gallo and Jesse Winker.
Is it time for you to defend Joey Gallo
It's not time for me to not defend the Nationals for replacing sub-replacement level players with guys who have already failed elsewhere. The Royals have stopped doing that. So, you know, now look. Jordan, it's a long climb up from 56 wins. Their over-under is 73.5 wins. Yep. I'm not even sure I'd take that. But again, they're starting from a higher platform than you'd think just looking at what they did last year.
Can I give you one more bet I like real quick at pretty good odds?
Is it the Orioles to lose?
I wish. How about the Mariners to win the AL West at plus 300? They trail the Astros and the World Series champion Rangers, but first of all, I think this team is built to succeed in the regular season because their starting rotation is so good and so young and so deep. Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, Brian Wu. And that's to say nothing of the chance that maybe they'll sign Blake Snell. But damn, that's a good five-man rotation. And then you add in the offensive moves they made. I like bringing in Jorge Polanco. We talked about the Mitch Garver move. You know, this is a terrible offensive team, but that'll jumpstart them. Maybe Mitch Haniger coming back helps him. I like Josh Rojas and like the nine hole. Again, at plus 300 to win the division. There's a lot to like about the Mariners. Do you agree with me, or are you like, nah, they're not going to be better than the Rangers?
What I like about the Mariners is, again, these moves from the outside in a world that where we talk about Yamamoto and Soto nonstop. And now in New York, all anyone's talking about is whether the Mets will re-sign Pete Alonso. Teams that make a lot of intelligent, smallish moves that can add up and are likely to pan out. Like maybe Garver gives you 280 at bats and that's it. But you know pretty much that he's going to be really excellent, right, in those at bats. And the Mariners made a whole bunch of those kinds of moves. And, Julio Rodriguez. So, sure. And also, Jordan, that division. Are we going to be sitting here in 2030 talking about Houston winning their 87th division in a row? No. So at some point, they're getting a little old. I think. Let me put it this way. I like almost everything the Mariners have done more than I like Houston re-signing Jose Abreu for 3 years.
Well, it'll be fun to watch over the next month who makes more additions. There's still a lot of guys unsigned. We'll revisit this at the end of March. But for now, I think those are some fun long shot bets to make. If you're into futures, you can ride them out with us. And let's wrap on this episode. I'm Jordan. That's Peter. We'll see you next week.
This is an episode that had a kaboom and a woo. What more can you ask for?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.